The views and opinions expressed by any hosts or guests of WJMS Radio do not reflect the beliefs of its owners or associates. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to WJMS Radio or the show hosts whose words, advice, and or opinions appear from or on our website or on air.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Are we on the air?
You're listening to WJMSradio.com.
Jam.
This chick is a sick individual.
You're tuned in to Sound Off with your girl Jams right here on WJMSradio.com.
There is no competition.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Sound Off right here on WJMS Radio. This is your girl, Jams. I am so excited to be with you guys today. I have such a good show, such a feel-good, like, nostalgic show for me. You know, my guest for today is somebody who I have known for a long time. I don't even know. I think it's been like 16 years or something crazy on a strange kick. But my special guest for today is Jamar Nicholas. Before we get into the show, let me, of course, do my housekeeping tips and tools. So we are going to be, this is a podcast, of course, so you can't interact with us live, but please do feel free to drop a comment on any of the platforms that you're seeing this in, whether it be via the Facebook video stream or whether it's in our archive. Feel free to share as well. You can check us out at WJMS Radio on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. Which is another way that you can interact with us. And of course, make sure you check out Double Mint Radio as well. This show will, of course, podcast at 7 p.m. in the UK on Double Mint Radio right after this is done. So make sure that you check that platform out if you miss any bit of this show whatsoever. So like I mentioned at the beginning of the show here, I have known this gentleman, Jamar Nicholas, for years, ladies and gentlemen. This is such a way overdue, you know, connection and show that we should have been had so many years ago. But I'm excited no less to welcome him to the show. Jamar Nicholas is an award-winning Philadelphia-based artist and educator. He has dedicated his career to helping young people realize the power of cartooning. His recent works include adapting and illustrating Jeffrey Canada's Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun, Detective Boogaloo, Hip Hop Cop. He's serialized in the U.S. Metro newspapers, Philadelphia, New York City, and Boston, of course, and Leon, who is Protector of the Playground, which won the Dwayne McDuffie Award for Diversity in 2018. He's also a writer and a columnist for Draw Magazine, the how-to source for comic and animation professionals, as well as co-host of the Pencil to Pencil podcast with industry legends like Mike Manley and Brett Blevins. So I am so excited to welcome him to the show because not only is he all those things, he's also a good friend of mine. So Jamar, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me today. And how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Jams. Thanks for having me. This is really exciting.
It is exciting. It's been so long. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, I met you, for the folks that don't know who this gentleman is, I met Jamar in Arcadia University when I was just a student there. And that was back in 2004 when I was a freshman and still working in the facilities office. But I had, you know, immediately connected with him up in, I think, Murphy Hall, if I'm not mistaken, or was it Spruance? I don't even remember.
One of the two
art places that we were on campus. But yeah, I mean, he was always in that office and he was always like just this ray of sunshine every time I came in there. And he always had Twizzlers. I will always remember that you always had Twizzlers.
Yeah, but, that's morale is always helped with sugar.
It is. It definitely is. So, I mean, I gave the audience your bio as, you know, the award-winning Philadelphia-based artist and educator, but why don't you give the audience the biography of Jamar as the person, like where you came from and how you came to be the artist that you are?
Very cool. Thanks. So I am from Philadelphia. I'm from West Philly, from 50th and Race. I didn't spend my whole life there. The family house is there, but I basically grew up in West Philly until I was like 9, 10, 11, and we started moving all around the city. Mm-hmm. So a lot of Philadelphians, and you know, Jamie, because you're from Boston, I'm sure you know a lot of Philly ins and outs. Boston and Philly are a lot alike. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like it takes a lot for Philadelphians to leave town and go someplace else because you're kind of inbred to just stay there. Like there's nothing better than the town you're from.
Yeah.
So why would you leave, right? But we did move around a lot. Like I would say I spent most of my my rearing years in Germantown and around in that area. But I always had an affinity for comic strips and comic books and cartooning at a very young age. I wanted to be a comic strip artist. So I grew up, this is like before, I hate to say these kind of limiting things, like this is before the internet.
That sounds so bad, doesn't it?
Right. But it's like the internet's been around so long. I think it's hard for people to believe that there was a time before that.
Yeah.
So before all that stuff, I was a big fan of the comic strips, like in the Sunday paper. I like Peanuts and Andy Cap and Doonesbury and all this weird stuff. What I fell in love with was the fact that these people created their own universe inside four panels.
Yeah.
And told these stories every day and never repeated themselves. And I thought that was a great magic trick. So I started steering in that direction to want to do that as a career. And this is at the point where nobody did that.
Yeah.
Right. Like being a cartoonist was, you know, that wasn't a real thing. Yeah. And I don't know if you remember or if you were like this or you had other friends when you guys were little, everybody liked to draw.
Yep.
Right. Everybody's like, yo, look, I did this, or I could draw Garfield or whatever.
Yep.
But at some point, you stop doing that.
Yeah.
And there's maybe one or two people that keep going with it. And now I guess that was me. So I kept developing and I went to all the art high school and schools and after school programs in Philly. And I went to University of the Arts for animation as a young adult. And I was always working on like comic books. I kind of fell in love with comic books right before we left West Philly. I didn't grow up on comic books. And started thinking about telling longer form stories, having more space to create. And a lot of time passed, and here we are.
That's funny. Fast forward 20 years later.
Yeah, fast forward 20-something years later, here we are, and I'm in the business.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, to me, that's amazing. What you said is funny. Like, I have a lot of friends who are Philadelphia friends and they are born and raised in Philly and have never left and don't plan on ever leaving.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't know.
You had the wanderlust like a hobbit.
I do wander a bit. I do kind of, you know, that's a Sagittarius in me. You know, we can't sit still for very long. We like to get up and go. But no, I think one of the things that sort of, that connected me to you the most was the fact that you did, you know, the art that you do. And you're right. When I was a kid, I did want to draw. My original career aspirations as a young kid was to be an architect. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I got to college and found out how much math is required in drawing buildings. And I was like, yeah, never mind. Forget it. So for me, because I came into Arcadia as an art major and I was drawing and painting. But, you know, I ended up changing my major because I took AP art in high school so I could get college credit and have a jump start. And so I had already built that portfolio and foundation and all that kind of stuff. And I got to Arcadia and they're like, yeah, you got to take foundations. And I was like, what?
It's
like, I just did that all senior year. And like, they basically wanted me to redo my entire portfolio. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to switch gears and just try something different. And then I ended up on the communications path. But I mean, in any way, like the fact is I got to meet you and it was really exciting because it was like, you know, just working in the facilities office, I got to know all the different people on the university or at the university, and I got to know them in different ways, you know, like I got to know them as a professional, but I also got to know them on a personal level. And we used to bust it up and catch up on different things and and so on and so forth. But I mean, are you still at Arcadia now or have you left?
No, I'm still there. I'm very loyal. So I'm still there. And I think what really works for me is that I have my art career always churning in the background.
Yeah.
So I'm not ever really looking for my next gig because I'm cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like my next gig, I already have my next gig is my art career. And what I love about working at the college is that, you know, I've kind of created a micro legacy there. And I can kind of just mentor, like a lot of the things about the job, and as you know, is like less about the job and more about connecting with other people.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you come across a lot of young people who are at very weird crossroads in their lives. And I try to, you know, look out for people, give advice when I can. My new nickname at the job is Work Dad.
Oh, are we there now?
Yeah, has it been that long for you? Yeah, that's UCLA's gray hair. That's where I'm at now. They're like, Jamar, my boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, let's talk it out.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
So well, I mean, I always want to come back and visit, but like, I never know who's still there. There's been so many changes at Arcadia that like I drive through every now and then when I come to Philly and I'm just like, wow, like that was there before. Oh, wow. You know, like I never know who's still around and who's not. So it's good to know that there's still a familiar face at Arcadia when I go.
Once COVID is over, come by, we'll have a coffee.
Yeah. Now, as long as you got Twizzlers, let's keep it old school. You got to have Twizzlers. You just need to have a set of Twizzlers at your desk ready for me when I show up.
I keep disappointed. I keep snacks. That's important. Yeah.
Yep.
And one other thing, Jamie, I think is interesting is that there weren't a lot, especially at the time when you were a student, there weren't a lot of brown people there. Right. Yeah. So I think we probably connected on that too.
Definitely.
And that's something that I take really seriously, but not like I'm campaigning or, you know, trolling the campus looking for black kids, but they kind of all gravitate towards you at some point. You know what I mean?
I mean, when you go to a predominantly white institution and you are, you know, in that select few minorities that go there, you recognize each other, you know, you see each other and there's this moment of recognition where you're like, hey, and they're like, hey, and you're like, yeah, hey, you know, like you kind of understand where each other are to the point where that school was so small. So we could tell when there was a newcomer, we're like, oh, who's that? Oh, they're new. They definitely don't go here. Like, you know, we knew who they were. Like, we knew who all the black professionals were on campus, you know, the Doreen Lowry and Judy Dalton and, you know, all the folks that were there. We all knew who everybody was. And so it was a very tight knit community. And I think that was one of the things that kind of kept me at Arcadia, because if you remember, Arcadia was a very transient college as well. People would come and they would kind of go.
Yeah.
I stayed because of the, like you said, I stayed because of the connections that I made with people and because of sort of like the niche that I found there and that I liked. So
yeah,
that was definitely part of it. So I guess I owe you a thank you for making me stay at Arcadia for as long as I did.
Either that or I owe you money. I don't know how you want to.
I'll take the second. For sure. For sure.
Checks in the mail.
Right. Yeah, I'll be on the lookout for it. So the one thing that I want to talk to you about is just what was your first? Because you said, you know, everybody as a kid likes to draw. And, you know, at some point in time, you put it down. But I mean, I know for me, I was one of those kids that never really put it down until like it came to college. And I was like, OK, let me transition and do something different. Right. But I always still liked to color. So I would see your artwork and just be like, man, I just want to really just color this in for you. Can I just like be that person?
Right,
you know, and that
right.
has always been something that stuck out for me. But like, what was that first kind of like, I know you said you grew up on the comics and the Sunday paper and all that, but what was that comic that you were like, you know what? I can do this. I want to do this. And I think this is what I want to do. Like, what was that spark for you and where it all began?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. I've been kind of like doing some deep diving through my past and kind of aside of all of this stuff. A lot of my friends and associates these days are either creatives of some spark. Either they're cartoonists or illustrators or art directors or, you know, things like that. And one of my friends is an art director in Chicago, and they do a lot of mass market books. Like when you go to the BJ's or the Costco and they have that big table of books, you know, like, you know, Elmo's 1, 2, 3, speak and spell, like all that kind of stuff. Like somebody has to make that stuff, you know, really think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, she is one of the companies that does that stuff and started talking about old Sesame Street books. And there's a popular Sesame Street book with Grover in it where it's like the monster at the end of this book. I don't know if you've ever seen that. We're a couple generations between each other, but when Sesame Street was real heavy back in the 70s and everybody was like, you know, riding with Sesame Street, and they started doing a lot of illustrated picture books. So there's one book called Monster at the End of This Book, and it's basically Grover discovering himself. I found out the monster at the end of this book is me. What was I afraid of? And everybody started like reminiscing about books that you grew up on. And I was like, you know what? I didn't have that one, but there was another book called, it was in the same series. It was Grover and the Worldwide Museum of Everything. And it was just basically like a, this is what things are, kid. This is how you learn stuff. So there was the Grover was going through this illustrated museum. You go in a room where things you could write with. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a pencil, it's a pen, there's a typewriter, there's a carrot. You can't write with a carrot. Let me take this to the other. And I remembered that I connected so heavy with this book, and it wasn't really the themes, it was the illustrations in it. And like the way the dude drew Grover, and it looked like he was real, like he had real fur and he had texture.
Yeah.
And something just kind of clicked in my head, like, yo, I want to do that. I didn't really have the tools yet, but I think it might have been with that Grover book. So I got to go buy it now. Yeah.
That's 100% not the answer I was expecting. I know, right? Like, I picked up like Spider-Man number 2, and that's, I was like, yeah, that was.
Well, you know what's funny about that is I think that saved me from a lot of geeky fandom stuff. Yeah. Like, one thing that happens with a lot of comic book creators, and this, I don't want to turn anybody off, but one thing that happens is we get asked by fans a lot, what's your favorite issue? Remember in issue 456 when the thing hit Dr. Doom? Like, no. I'm like, fam, I don't, what? So there's something, you kind of cross a threshold when you became a fan of something and then you went into the industry doing that thing.
Yeah.
Where you have to kind of put some things down or put some stuff in your pocket. And the fandom of drawing this stuff is one of the first things to go with a lot of people. So I didn't really connect. Sorry, my dog's bugging. I hope it's not too bad. it's saddening for a lot of people to find that out when they meet their comic book heroes, is that, you know, you don't really want to bust anybody's bubble and say, sorry, kid, I just draw the stuff, you know, because that's like deflating. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but you just go, oh yeah, that was a great job. We had fun on that. I'm glad you enjoy it. And you can kind of keep moving from there.
Yeah.
So I think that also has a lot to do with my cartooning style, because I don't really draw comic booky. You know, I don't draw like, you know, big muscle Captain America gritting teeth stuff.
Yeah.
So I think all of those like influences kind of dictate how I tackle projects too.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. It does. Okay. But, it, you know, because it's one of the things that always intrigued me was just the sheer magnitude of how many comic books there are, because everyone's like, oh, you know, you should get into comics. You should do that. Cause like, you know, obviously with all the Marvel movies coming out in DC and everything that's going on, and then Into the Spider-Verse and just all of these movies that have come out, I was like, you know, everyone's like, you should really, did you read the comics? Cause this is all in the comics. And I'm like, no, like I just enjoy the movie, but it's like, you know, even if I wanted to jump into comics, it's like, where do you even begin? Like, it's just such a large world, and to be able to talk to somebody like you who's like in a part of that world in any way, shape, or form is amazing, because it's intimidating for somebody who, you know, I've asked this question to my friends before, like, if I'm going to start reading comics, where should I start? And everybody's giving me a different answer, because that's how big the industry is. And it's just like, you know, it's crazy.
Well, it's kind of, think about it like this. It's like, say, and I don't want to be morbid, but say you wake up tomorrow and now you have vision, right? You're like, yo, I've been blind my whole life, but now I can see. What movie should I go watch? You know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah, like all of them. Like, what are we talking about? Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. It's like, what are you in the mood for? You know, like, where do you want to go with it?
Right. So if you think about comics as, and this is hard for some people, as a medium, not a genre, it kind of helps a little bit more. So I would say something to like that, because I get asked that a lot once in a while, rather than making you a list, like a shopping list. I would say, well, you know, what's your personality like? What are your interests? Do you like horror? Do you like romance? Do you like bulging muscle punch through the window stuff? Like, do you like
anime?
Right. It's like asking somebody, do you like Fast and the Furious, or, you know, like a J-Lo Made in Manhattan movie?
Yeah, it's like,
they're two totally different things. Yeah,
that makes sense. And like, yeah, so it's one of those, like, it's so hard to dive into that, because there are so many different ways you can go. So that's why it's so difficult to answer that question. But
I'm sorry, Jamie, but just to kind of put a pin in that, one of the interesting things about that is usually when people say comic books, your first thought is Spider-Man.
It is.
Or Batman, or, you know, whatever, man, whoever those people are, Wonder Woman, whatever. Yep. But there's so much more than that. And I'm not knocking, you know, superhero comics. I think they're dope. But, you know, it kind of opens a lot more questions. And even like, well, what's a graphic novel versus a comic book? And it's, you know, you keep peeling the onion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an onion. That's for sure. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the, cause I mean, award-winning is 100% true about you. And I've seen, I remember the day, cause I moved to New York. And I remember the day that I picked up a Metro paper and I happened to flip through and your comic was in it. And I was like, oh no. It was like, for me, it was like, oh, I wanted to like show everybody on the subway, but I don't want to be that girl. But like, it was for me like that. I felt like I was like, that was like the quintessential moment for me, for you, which I was just like, oh, look at this. Like,
wow, Jamar's thank you.
Dag on newspaper. Like, I felt like I just was really, really excited for you. And so I want to talk about that accomplishment, yeah. You know, because okay. Being, you know, serialized in Metro Papers is amazing. But I want to talk about what that accomplishment is for you, because that may not have been like, for me, that was like, oh, you couldn't get cooler to me, you know, but like you, what would that accomplishment be? Like, what would that accomplishment that you get that makes you feel like, okay, I'm dope. Everybody recognize how dope I am. This is amazing.
Well, no, I appreciate that. Well, I think one of a good way to tackle that subject is kind of like thinking about career goals, right?
Yep.
One of the things that, and you can always shut me up because you know I like to talk.
No, this is what the purpose of the show is, talk.
but one thing that kind of messes a lot of people up when you come out to your family and say, Mom and Dad, I want to be an artist, and everybody's disappointed. And they're like, well, don't you want to be a dentist or something that makes money?
Don't you want to make money?
Don't you want, yeah. Right. And I've had this argument for decades about, I feel like art and being a creative is less about it being a job and more about being almost a lifestyle. It's yes, it's a career, but it's something that you don't really retire from. Mm-hmm. The thing with artists, especially cartoonists, well, maybe all artists, is that you never hear of an artist saying, well, I'm 65 now. I'm not going to draw anymore.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to go sail this boat. You know what I mean? It's just something that is in you and you always are creating and making new things. So to be in it as long as I've been doing it, you have to kind of rather look at it as what's the next thing I can do? What's the next thing I can do? What's another rung on the ladder I can achieve? So there are parts where I'm like really excited that something opened up. And a big part of my career is that I've done a lot of things first. Meaning I didn't follow somebody else's trajectory. Like a lot of the lanes that I've went down, they weren't there before I did it. And that's not like, I'm not humble bragging. It's just I'm a Black cartoonist who is pretty well known for doing stuff that I created.
Yeah.
Versus, oh, he drew Spider-Man for 10 years.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? So even thinking about things in that thing. So everything to me is kind of like a level up. So when I started getting serialized in that newspaper thing, that was another thing. The Metro had never done a comic strip.
Yeah.
And the editor at the time hit me up and was like, hey, we need something for the paper. I don't know what it is. And I was about to say no when they did it, because I had done editorial for the Tribune in Philly maybe 10 years before that. And it killed me. I'm not, especially at the time, I wasn't really political. And I don't have a lot of nasty, sarcastic, snipey, judgy things to say about politics. And that's a whole different brain thing, right? Yeah. I'm sure you have friends who were like straight political, right? And it's
they try to get you into conversation. It's like, it's not my lane.
Yeah, like, fam, I feel you. I get it. I live here too. But I can't talk about this all day.
Yeah.
So doing that, I was like, well, I'm thinking they wanted me to do something like, you know, make fun of J-Lo or the Kardashians. And I was like, I don't have the energy for something like that.
Yeah.
But I wound up saying, well, hey, wait a minute. Let me see if I can pitch them one of my comic strips that I had started already that I'd like to keep moving with. And they said, yeah. So that's when I brought Detective Boogaloo Hip Hop Cop to them. And it was crazy to me hearing people find it for the first time, especially because I don't live in New York.
Yeah.
And I don't live in Boston. It was like, yo, wait, hold on. That's the same Jamar? I think the flip of this is that when you do those kind of levels up that are pretty mainstream, I think it legitimizes you to other people.
Yeah.
Right. So this is the scary part of this conversation. And Jamie, that one of the things I love about you is that you're the same thing. You're like a firebrand. Like, you've created your own deal and you go your own way. And then people go, yo, how'd she get that? How'd she do that? Who told her how to do?
A lot of blood.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of blood. A lot of blood and tears.
Yeah.
But I say a lot to people who are struggling, trying to find people to cape for them or champion them, is that, all right, this is my spicy take. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
I think most people think, if I know you, you can't be famous.
It's true. Right? It is very true. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah, I know her. We grew up on the block. Wait, what? She did what? She's on what? Nah, she must be whack, or it must be an accident. Yeah. So, but we're really quick to go buy a new pair of Yeezys. I mean, we don't know Yeezy.
Right.
But you pay Yeezy, but you don't want to pay
hundreds of dollars for shoes.
Right. So that's kind of the lane I'm on. So I'm really excited when people see my work and they're starting to recognize that what I've been doing all this time wasn't wheel spinning or guessing or throwing darts at a board. Like, things are calculated. And the last thing I'll say about all this, JB, is I said on Facebook last year before 2020 started, I wish I could go back before 2020. This is a dumpster fire year. I said to a lot of my creatives, like, all of a sudden everybody started bubbling, right? Everybody's doing stuff that's really popping. I have a bunch of buddies that have movies coming out from their books. One of my buddies won the Newbery Medal for his kid's book. Like, these are like big, big accomplishments.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you post really good news and there's always the little wow emoji that people put, it's like, mm-hmm. like, love, wow, and sad, right?
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I don't like the wow, because the wow to me means that you don't believe it, or you're surprised. Shocking. It shocked you. You're surprised that that happened. And I said, no wow emojis in 2020. This is what we're doing. We're doing big things. Well, you know, I didn't think it was going to be COVID. That's not where I was going with it. But so it's just the thing of, you know, believing in your creative, the creative people in your life, that they're actually making good decisions and making moves, shouldn't be a shock. Or they never believed in you in the first place.
That part. That part.
that's real rap. So, but yeah, I'm sorry. I'm spinning out of control.
No, that's good. I mean, cause it was for me, like, you know, I want to talk about the fist stick knife gun too, and how that came about. Cause that was a big deal too. But like, seeing you in the papers for me was just like, it wasn't a shock for me. Good. It was just like yes. Like, y'all see this? Like, I felt like an excited sister. I was like, oh my God, look at this. Look at this. Look at what he did.
Thank you.
You know,
so
for
much.
Me, that was an amazing moment. But, and it's funny because, you know, you said you flipped it back on me, and I'm like, I had my glass ceiling, and owning a radio station wasn't it, like, at all. Like, my glass ceiling for me was being a personality on Sirius XM. Mm-hmm. And then the opportunity came to own the platform, and I was like, oh yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. So it's really funny how your expectations versus reality sometimes come into play. And sometimes, like, the path that you're traveling down is not the path that you expected to go, but it is the best path that you could possibly be on.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to jump into a little bit about the industry and specifically where we are currently, because I would assume that when you first started drawing and doing your illustrations and stuff like that, it was probably very, you know, black and white, pen to paper.
Like, traditional. Probably very analog.
Yeah, exactly. You know, very much straightforward, traditional, no frills attached, if you will. So I wanted to know if there have been any improvements, any updates, any maybe apps or programs that have come out that have made your job easier to do. And if so, you know, how?
Well, that's a great question. I think the move to digital has helped production for me. Just for expediency's sake, meaning just I can do things a little faster than before. But beyond that, things haven't really changed. So as an example, real quick, if I was drawing a comic book traditionally, that means I'm going to have a stack of 11 by 17 illustration board, a pencil, a ruler, ink pens, and a brush, and I'm going to bang this out. And then after it's done, I have to then take it and scan it and clean it up and change things around because they did, you know, blah, blah, blah. And and those steps, some of those steps are eliminated if I'm drawing directly into the computer, right? So one thing that I think a lot of people just assume because they love Pixar movies or they love, you know, the latest CGI thing is that you just press the art button and then the movie comes out the other side. You know what I mean? You still like, you still need the skill of the person at the table. So I can just do things with less steps versus it being easier for me. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
No, 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 that makes 100% sense. So, I mean, is how long does it take now for you to put together, you know, a typical piece of art? And I know like for you, sometimes you have shorter pieces versus longer pieces. So, I mean, how long does it take to do an average piece of work for you now? And has that, I mean, I guess, cause you're eliminating steps, it takes a little bit quicker time, which is
right.
Good.
Right. Now, and also emailing things rather than putting them in the mail to a client. That's the other thing. I would say I'm pretty fast, but I would say if I well, I was just talking about a comic book page, I can probably do 2 pages a day if I have no distractions and I can just I have the time in front of me to sit down and just, you know, worry about finishing this page. That's always scary for a lot of cartoonists to admit, because when you say out loud, this is what I can do in a day, editors assume you can do more in a day. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that means I didn't pee and I didn't eat lunch.
I worked all day.
I worked all day. And a lot of the other part of that is that all this stuff just takes time. Everything takes time. And you can't really look at your clock and go, okay, I'll be done at 10 o'clock because you may not be done at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, okay, well, I'm halfway where I thought I was. Do I put this down and go to bed, or do I pull an all-nighter and then I'm a wreck the rest of the week?
Yep.
Because I don't snap back the way I used to.
Oh, no, no. That snap back is not, it's not as good as it was.
It's not a good look. I can't do all-nighters anymore. So it's like, is it worth my health? And right, is it worth my health and my kind of like my focus to try to sit this one out and try to finish it and wake and like be done at 6 a.m. But now I'm useless for 3 more days because I can't catch back up.
Yep.
Yeah. So like, you know, all that said, the computer makes things quicker. But also, what happens when you have a crash? What happens when you forgot to save something and you got to start over?
Yep.
You know, what happens up now is a storm outside. I better turn everything off because that's how I grew up. Get off the phone because it's lightning outside.
Yeah, right. It's lightning. Get out of the shower. You know, all of these myths that we grew up with.
I love it. Get off the phone. Can't you hear it's lightning? Okay.
And turn off the TV. Like, so we just got to sit in darkness. It's 2020. Really? It's the best we can do.
Really? Really, Grandma? So, but yeah, it's kind of like a, I don't want to say a blessing and a curse, but there's like pros and cons in both ways, but it has made things a lot more expedient.
Yeah. I always ask that question, especially when I have creatives on my show, when I talk to authors or when I talk to musicians and I'm like, you know, back in the day, y'all was peddling your mixtapes out the trunk. Now you could put your stuff up on a social media platform and hit, you know, like, how does that make you feel? Like, you know, like, and there's always, like everyone says, there's the pros and there's the cons, you know, like same thing with auto tunes and creating the music, you know, there's, you don't hear people using real instruments anymore. It's very rare that you hear a real instrument on a track or an artist who is doing a real instrument in their music. Because there's apps and there's programs now that take away the need to master you know, playing the piano or master doing a saxophone.
But I'm sure you can hear it. Right. Yeah. I'm sure you have an ear that you can go, that's produced. That's not like the same. That's not. I'll give you one thing, James. There was a divide in production for a while with people who could sniff out digitally inked comic book pages. right? Oh. So that's like, say you do everything pencil by pencil, and then you scan into pencils, and then on the computer, rather than with a brush and a bottle of ink, you kind of like use the tools of Photoshop or Clip Studio mm-hmm. Paint or one of these things, and do the same thing with the with your stylus. And there's something about the computer that makes things, it would flatten things out or make them just look a little fake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
And the tools are getting a lot better, but a comic book guy could go, yeah, that's digital, isn't it? You know, or you painted that in Photoshop, didn't you?
Yeah.
And now it's getting to the point where you can't tell. And I don't know if that matters to some people, but it matters to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It's the difference between a real instrument and auto-tune.
Right.
It's the quality. It's almost like it's not necessarily the quality, but it's like, it is in a weird way. It's the quality. Like you can, like you hear a piano when there's a piano playing, you know, there's a difference.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, the internet, what do they say? It hit different.
It hit different when it's real.
It hit different. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Like it's 100. I agree. I definitely agree. Mm. And I do remember, you know, kudos to you. I watched you do a time lapse. You know, you did a time-lapse video of a comic, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like,
thank you.
That type of stuff is really cool. And thank I was you. Like, watching you do that, I'm like, man, every time I see you do something, I'm like, I got to color. I need to get up and color. I need to go color something. I got to put color in lines. Like, it's just a reminder that, like, you know, art was a hobby for me that I considered having it be a career for a little while, but it quickly became a hobby again, and I need to make sure that it's a hobby that I continue.
Yeah.
And then I don't let just fall to the wayside, you know. Now, so
now didn't I send you some black and white art at some point? Or I said I was.
I'll send you
some stuff to color. How's it?
It was a conversation we had. I don't know if it ever manifested and you sent it. And if you did send it, I don't remember. But let's just pretend like it didn't happen. And let's start over.
All right, I can do that.
Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about Fist Stick Knife Gun. I mean, even as we're sitting here talking, I can see the poster like right behind you on the wall back there. And so I want to talk about how that came about. You know, what was that like? What's the story behind that? Because that was for us, that was a major deal. That was a big deal for us to see as fans of Jamar Nicholas. How did that come about? And, you know, where are we with it, I guess? Like, where are we now with Fist Stick Knife Gun?
Okay. So in 2008, wow, that's crazy. In 2008, I think it was around then, I was approached by some editors at Beacon Press on Beacon Hill in Boston, if I have that right, about adapting Jeff Canada's memoirs into a graphic novel. Now, just to show you how far we've come in time, when they were talking about that, that was a really new idea to do a graphic novel. And it was basically almost 10 years, a little over 10 years ago. But the market was so different then. Like, they existed. I'm not saying I invented graphic novels. That's not where I'm going with this. But they hadn't really gripped the culture yet. Like, there were some really, you know, standout ones like Mouse or Persepolis, or like there are certain books that everybody, like Dark Knight Returns, like there's some very standout books, but people were still surprised that you could tell really personal stories in memoir using comics. So there was a book called Fun Home by a cartoonist named Alison Bechdel that was on the New York Times bestseller list. And it opened a lot of people's eyes all of a sudden. It's like, whoa, oh, wow, this is deep. And there's no people with capes in it. Yeah. And this woman's talking about her troubled childhood with her parents. Yo, that's a thing? Like, I was in the is that a thing era of graphic novels. So they approached me. I was like, yeah, we want to do something like this. We've never done this before. You're the first. Here we go. Talk about lanes again. We've never done this before. We're not exactly sure this is going to work, but do you want to give it a shot? So it wasn't such a clear-cut thing. I had to audition basically for this gig where I had to do samples from the original prose book. There's a original version of Fist Stick Knife Gun with no pictures in it.
Yeah.
And they sent my stuff and a couple of other illustrators who they had approached. They sent all that stuff to Jeff Canada, and Jeff picked me himself, which was a really cool honor. And he was like, I love where your head's at. I was always a fan of comic books. I like the energy. Let's go.
That's a moment.
Yeah, it was great. And for people who aren't familiar, the book is basically about the life of Jeff Canada growing up in the South Bronx in the early 50s, 60s, and 70s. So I came in, you know, and it's hard to talk about that stuff because we live in such a comic book centric culture now.
With Marvel and DC.
Right, right. It's because people just assume the stuff was always here. And it's funny that Marvel almost went bankrupt in the early thousands to think where they are here now. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So basically the story is less about this guy and more about, especially in my, the way I looked at it, what happens to young kids who grew up in the city solving their problems with violence. And what I wanted to bring to the book was an emotional resonance that even if you've never been a boy, even if you've never been black, even if you've never lived in the city,
yeah,
you can connect with what's happening in the story. So it's not really a feel good tale. You don't leave the book like, ah, I'd like a nice glass of lemonade. That was a good summer beach read. It's not a beach read, right? It's, you know, it's a deep book with deep themes about kids who basically turn against their own nature to survive in their environment, right? And, you know, when you say things like that, it's not like, oh, that doesn't sound like that's something I want to read. But I think...
No, it is, though.
Right?
That's well, good stuff.
And I had heard, especially when the book came out, because the book came out in 2010, and I won a couple of awards for it, and it was on the YALSA Great Graphic Novels for Teens list, the Library Association. And people started using this as a resource. I know that now they teach this book in a lot of social justice classes in colleges across the country. And some, it's pretty cool, right? And sometimes I'll be at a comic book convention and a kid will come up and go like, oh, I read that book in my English class. And I'm just like, wow, that's ridiculous. So, you know, it kind of turned my world into doing things that have meaning. Less than, oh yeah, I need the money to keep my lights on. So it turned a shift in my career where I started saying no to things or saying, well, so what's the point of this project? Oh, just this and the other. Well, you know, and I'm not really interested in that. So it started like channeling me to do things that are going to have more meaning than another issue of, say, the Hulk. And that's not a knock on the Hulk, but it's just kind of like... Like this book came out 10 years ago. We're still talking about the same themes, you know, and BLM is going on and all this stuff. And now people are discovering this book for the first time. Like, yo, I just found this book. They're talking about the stuff going on the streets. Like, nah, fam, I did that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Like y'all are late.
Yeah. Y'all mad late. So it's like things like these are evergreen subjects. And I think as long as there are books like that, that you can give a kid or you can give somebody's mother who had lots of really spicy things to say about those black neighbors across the street who just moved in and you don't understand why their hair is so short. Why are they brushing it all the time? Yeah. Like what's they don't even have any hair. I don't even know what they're brushing it for. Like having things like that really opens discussion and helps people be a little more empathetic.
I like that. And so I know that, you know, part of the pathway that you walk down now is that you help young people realize the power of cartooning. So I want to give you a minute to talk a little bit about how that has manifested itself in your career for you. Like, what are you doing with young people nowadays mm-hmm. to help sort of foster that love and to mm-hmm. to channel all of that? You know, what's been happening in Jamar world with the youth?
Well, it's been not as much as I used to. Like, I was really heavy in teaching. Mm-hmm. Like maybe 10, 7, 8, 6 years ago, where I taught at Moore College of Art. I taught a lot of the youth programs. I was a fixture every summer in the youth art program, where I would teach 4th to 6th grade cartooning and high school comic book illustration. And well, the thing about that class, which sounds really fun, is that the classes were 3 hours every day. And Jamie, imagine your fourth grade self sitting in a chair for 3 hours. Like,
yeah,
it's not the wave, right?
Yeah.
So I took that opportunity for kids who had a passing interest in wanting to draw or just enjoying drawing things until they're bored to find that to do this stuff for real, you have to go past a comfortability threshold, right? So if you're somebody who pulls out their little notebook every once in a while and draws something until they're bored and you put it down, like that's not how I make my living. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a real thing you have to practice at. So, you know,
yeah.
And now it's really cool that I once in a while run into a kid I had in class years ago, and they're, if not really in the industry or trying to do comic books, they have a better understanding of what dedication to craft means. So, and I do a lot of library talks. I do school visits. Now I'm doing school Zooms because I can't, you know, obviously I can't go to anybody. COVID. Yeah. Because COVID.
that's a sentence. Because COVID. Yeah. It all makes sense now.
But yeah, it's really important to me to reach back and pull kids up and know that this is an actual thing you can do for a living and make a difference. And also there are Black people doing it. Guess what? Right. So all the optics of all the stuff that I do, I take really seriously. And I also remember being that kid on the stoop in West Philly drawing with my friends, knowing that there weren't a lot of me's then. And if I had known that there was a guy in town that did this, I would have been like, yo, how can I, you know, meet him or whatever. So I think mentorship is really important.
Yeah. And I laugh because like, people are always like, yeah, I want you to come and talk to the kids and come and talk to my class about, you know, doing radio stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. But I'm like, but I'm going to include in my story how this was not in my plans, like, and how they need to keep an open mind. Because yeah. I'm like, yeah. I never, whenever everybody asked me, I'm like, I never wanted to own a radio station. This was not in my career goals, but I was open to the opportunities and I was open to, you know, like I ran into people and my connections and my networks with people were genuine enough that this opportunity presented itself through a colleague of mine. And I was like, hell yeah, let's do this. You know, so it's not always about what you plan to do. You know, if you have a passing interest in something, you need to be interested in the entire sort of like the whole world of it, because you may have an opportunity to do something you never pictured doing. And it may be something that just fuels that fire for you, you know, like. I can't even imagine not having a radio station now. Like people, like I think about before WJMS existed and I see pictures of me and I'm like, oh, look at that young girl. She has no idea. She's so young. She has no idea. But it's one of those things where I kept my opportunities open and the pathways that presented themselves to me, I took them because I was like, you know what? This is interesting. Let me do that. And, you know, like you said, with kids who take out their book and they doodle for a few minutes and put it away, it's like sometimes, you know, you have to take that 3 hour class where you're uncomfortable to see if this is truly something you want to do. You know, like that's dipping your foot in the pool for real. Like go into an illustration class and see if you're excited to make it to the end of class, then that might be for you. You know, if this is something that becomes a chore, then, you know, maybe it's not for you, you know? Right. So it's a good thing that those classes were as long as they were.
Right. Even when I was in college, I was an animation major. We had 6 hour studios twice a week. Right. That's like 8:30 to four or
three.
Yeah. It's like, fam, you're there all day.
Yeah.
You know, so either what are you doing with that? Are you bored and looking out the window? Or are you trying to get your work done? You know, so it's a great litmus test. Yeah.
And I bet you there are some days that you were in those 6 hour classes, like it's not enough time. I just need a little bit longer. You know, like there are times where that 6 hours, you're like, oh, why can't we just stay? You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, one of the things that used to happen, I guess all over the building at an art school, is that kids used to, well, I think it's changed now. I don't know how people get down at their school. Well, not because COVID. But like at UArts, the culture was that people lived in the studio. If you were a printmaking major, you couldn't get in there to work on stuff because somebody was in there like printing t-shirts or making stickers. Or making hats, or you know what I mean? In the animation floor, people had sleeping bags and they would just like post up in the hallway and snow, you know what I mean? Like nobody's leaving.
Yeah.
You hit maybe do a Wawa run and come right back, but nobody's going home.
I miss Wawa so much. Oh, I miss Wawa. I mentioned that the other day to somebody. I was like, I would kill for like just a sandwich from Wawa right now. And
you need a shorty.
Oh, a shorty? What? Oh, don't even get me started. No, but yeah, no, that's true. I remember when I was in high school and I was in my AP studio classes, like we lived in there. We ate. We made friends in there. My first relationship came from the studio because I didn't have time to go out of the studio.
Right.
Like how it worked.
And, you know, and thinking about that now, it's kind of the same thing. Like we're talking, I'm in my studio here and I spend so much time in here and it's like it's your second home.
Yeah.
Right. So it also kind of creates a professionalism like. Like, I don't know how to not do this anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I do. So you need to have the tools to go along with it.
I agree. And so I remember at the beginning of the conversation, you know, you said you never had to worry about when your next gig was going to be because you always had, you know, you've always had that full-time job as well. Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered, you know, going full-time comic, going full rogue and just doing the comic thing?
Well, you know, things are starting to shift around for me and I can't ever say never, but there was a huge period of time. And this is before we met actually where I came to Arcadia. I come off of a 5-year freelance thing. Maybe it's 4 or 5 years right after 9/11.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see, maybe three or four years where I wasn't really in a place in my career that you could even say I had a career. I was just trying to like keep my head above water from drowning. And just if you remember that period of time, everybody was afraid for their lives and nobody was really thinking about wanting magazine illustrations. It's like, yo, we're going to die tomorrow. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty bad time to start a freelance career. And I have amazing stories about that time where I did work for almost nothing. I did a job where I made hot sauce labels for this lady's company and she paid me in hot sauce.
That tests your love for the craft. How much do you really love hot sauce?
I don't love hot sauce like enough. To warrant that. It's one of my favorite stories now. And I basically went back to Arcadia was my I need to go back to work thing. And I stayed for 15 years. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm loyal in a way that I needed it when I didn't have anything else. But at the same time, I never stopped moving in my art career. So it's kind of like my art career caught up and surpassed what I was doing at the day job. You know, so now I'm kind of like live this kind of weird life where and this is again, I don't want to act like I'm tooting my own horn because I'm totally not. But it's kind of like, what if I'm trying to find somebody who's not so super like, what if Denzel worked at Starbucks? And you're like, Denzel, why are you at Starbucks?
I worked here for years. Why not?
I like the people. I like writing people's names on the cup. What's wrong? Don't knock it. You know
I think
Denzel
should work at Starbucks. I think that should be a thing. I think all celebrities should work in menial jobs, like randomly, just so you walk in and it's like Cuba Gooding Jr. like at McDonald's. Like,
I think I'm more Cuba than Denzel, but yeah. you see what I mean? It's kind of like I'm like a people person and I don't like being in solitude. You know, so luckily for me, I've spent enough time sitting hunched over a table drawing that the COVID thing didn't drive me insane like a lot of people when it first happened. I'm like, cool,
you're like, oh, wait, we're quarantining? I've been in my studio. What's going on?
Like, cool, I got more work to do. So that helped me like transition out of that. But I enjoy people. I enjoy having conversations with people. I want to know what's new with you and how you're making your way. Like, that's why I interview people and have my own little podcast thing, because I like that kind of personal interaction with people. So, you know, even if, like, say I went full time and just in the studio, I'd still probably like have to go to a coffee shop somewhere and talk to people.
Just interact with people.
Yeah, I think that's important. Even for storytelling, like it can't all come out of your head. You have to like bounce off of people.
It's true. It's very true. So we're coming up on the end of the show here. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about what's coming up on the horizon and where folks can, of course, find you and follow you and subscribe to your work. But I have a silly question before we end the show.
Okay. All right.
So I remember being in junior high, high school, and everybody was drawing that little like money sign S or whatever. Like everybody was always doodling that little S on everything.
The S with the six hash marks, three lines,
and then the thing. Yeah, like everybody was doodling that S, and that was like the thing. So I want to know, what was the Jamar doodle like? What was like? What were you constantly writing on your books in school and on all your stuff in your classes and whatnot?
Well, you know what? That's interesting. One of the funny things that I've always worked on is my signature.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That sounds so vain, right?
No, not at all.
But like, I was always like, yo, if I had a comic book, how would I sign my name on the comic book? When somebody's like, Jamar, I got your comic book. Will you sign it? And I was like, I'm going to rock this J like, bam. And then like hit it with a little graffiti, a little Philly in there. And like, I would write almost like I always hear I was never a young girl. Like when girls like would write their name
and their crush's name on their books.
And their crushes on their books. I was just writing my name. I have a crush.
It's like a Jamar.
Yeah, just Jamar. And I had one job. Well, all of my major jobs since I've been an adult have been at colleges. I think that's why I really kind of connect with college kids, and you know, I'm perpetually young because I stay around college kids. Is I had the security desk job. I worked at LaSalle University for a long time, for 10 years. Crazy. Yeah. Enough.
You're a lifer at most jobs I see.
Yeah, I'm real steady. Like, I don't need to keep jumping around. Like, I stay in the pocket. Yeah. And one of my jobs was I was a security desk receptionist. So I'd be that person in front of the dorm, like before you go into the dorms at the turnstiles, and I would sign people in, and I would practice my signature on that. So it's like, hey, can I sign these people in? I'll be like, Jay. And people are like, yo, your signature is real extra. I'm like,
hey,
that's what it is. So, you know, so if you've ever gotten anything signed by me, you know what you're in for. That's so funny. That's my doodle. Yeah.
I try to think of what my doodle was. It was always that S. Like everybody for a while was just that S. Like, I don't know what that S was about, but everybody was doing it.
Nobody figured out any other letters you could make with the hash marks. It's just the S. That's great.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, or being with me today. I want to give you an opportunity, though, to shout out what's coming up on the horizon for you. Like, what do you have coming up, and where can folks find you and follow you and get in touch with you?
Sure. So my last project, Leon Protector of the Playground, is a graphic novel that I self-published through Kickstarter and the help of I have a virtual studio full of other comic book creatives, which in 2017 it came out. In 2018, I started winning a lot of awards for it. So I won three Glyph Awards for it. Was it three? I can't remember.
Go count your Emmys and get back to
me. I'm sorry. No, I'll be an extra. No, I won one Glyph Award. I won a bunch of awards for Fistic Knife Gun. And I also won a Dwayne McDuffie Award for Diversity. Mm-hmm. For that book, which is a really huge honor. All of them are really big honors. But I have some really exciting news on the horizon about the future of Leon. I can't say yet.
Oh.
Maybe the next time we talk, I'll have more information. But you can follow along with my things online and also check out my podcast, Pencil to Pencil. At my website is jamarnicholas.com. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And Jamie, did you know there's a lot of Jamar Nicholases?
I did not know that. I thought you were the only.
Well, you know, I know people are like, your name is so unique. And like, I know like 9 Jamars. It's not that.
I've only got eyes for you, sir. I didn't know of anybody else but you.
Yeah. So, you know, look for the label when you're Googling me. Like, whoever is supposed to be me should look like me.
And you'll have the extra signature, right? That should be there somewhere.
With the flourish, that's important, yeah. But check me out online. I'm all over the place.
All right, and I'll make sure I throw this in the comment section or the info section on the episode so people can link back to your website and to your socials and get the right Jamar.
That's right.
If they're looking to follow up with you. I want to thank you for being on the show with me today. It's been so much fun and way, way, way overdue, sir. Way overdue.
Well, thank you for having me, Jams. I had a great time. I appreciate it.
Definitely. So, folks, I will be back next week with another new episode of Sound Off. So make sure you are there. Until then, make sure you check out Doublemint Radio in the meantime. And WJMS always has tons of content for you to listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including some kick-ass playlists that I've put together myself. So please please go listen to my music. But like I said, I'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Until then, everybody stay safe, and I'll see you right back here on WJMS Radio.
Peace.
WJMS Radio.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Far too kind.
See, we keep it real. We always gonna keep it real. You can't knock what's real, you know what I'm saying? We telling the truth, man.